privately, Drinker was surprisingly understanding about the president's position. He wrote to an associate, "The unfortunate economic situation in which he finds himself makes it very hard for him to take any stand, save one in regard to radium, namely, that it is a harmless, beneficent substance which we all ought to have around as much as possible." He added, "It does not seem to me that the company can be blamed for what had happened to the girls." The doctor's standpoint may, in part, have been due to the discipline in which he worked, industrial hygiene. Until 1922, Drinker's department at Harvard was wholly funded by business. Even in 1924, commercial firms contributed money for special projects. To offend such a prestigious institution as USRC would not be wise. As one industrial physician put it, "Are we in industry to help carry out some soft, silly social plan? Are we in industry to buy the goodwill of the employees? No, we are in industry because it is good business." Thus, after a final exchange of views between Rhoda and Drinker, during which, perhaps to keep the doctor at bay, Rhoda made sure to mention the almost complete closing down of our application plant for lack of business, it had all gone quiet. The full report had never been published. The Department of Labour had been satisfied with the company's version of events. The current dial painters were no longer listening to hysterical rumours and were back at work. And Arthur Rhoda had been able to get on with business as usual. Until now. Until Catherine Wiley had stuck her nose in where it wasn't wanted. Unknown to Rhoda, Wiley and the female doctor she had previously asked for help, Dr. Alice Hamilton, who worked in the same department as Drinker, was stirring things up with his erstwhile investigators. Hamilton had learned that the reason the Drinker's report had not yet been published was because Cecil Drinker believed Rhoda should first give consent, which, naturally, was not forthcoming as the company was concealing the true results. Wiley thought Drinker's position showed a very unethical spirit. She called him dishonest. The two women had thus come up with a master plan, little knowing that USRC had already given a misleading précis of the report to the Department of Labour. They conspired to ask John Roach to request the results from Rhoda. Such a move, they judged, would force Rhoda's hand and bring the report into the light, as he could hardly refuse Roach in his official capacity. Therefore, when Roach revealed to Wiley that he had in fact already seen the Drinker's report, and that it put the company in the clear, she was taken aback. Wiley immediately told Hamilton, and Hamilton, who not only knew the Drinkers personally, but perceived that they would be perturbed by this misrepresentation of their data, wrote at once to Catherine Drinker. "Do you suppose," she wrote in mock innocence, "Rhoda could do such a thing as to issue a forged report in your name?" Catherine Drinker responded immediately. She and her husband were very indignant at the idea that Rhoda might have distorted their findings. "He has proved," Catherine concluded savagely, "a real villain." Encouraged by his wife, Cecil Drinker wrote to Rhoda, still, it has to be said, using language that flattered and appeased the president, to suggest the publication of the full study, urging that it can only be to your interest to see the publication. Your strongest position is one which must convince the public that you have done everything humanly possible to get to the bottom of the trouble in your plant." Wheels thus set in motion, Hamilton wrote to Wiley that she now believed the situation almost resolved. "Surely," she said, "Arthur Rhoda would not be stupid enough as to refuse to let Dr. Drinker publish the report. but she had underestimated the audacity of the president.